Hi, and welcome to the Coco 2D podcast. I'm your host, Mohammad Azam, and I'm joined here as usual with Stefan Eitelheim from Germany. How are you doing, Stefan?
I'm doing fine, thank you, and welcome to everyone who's listening in.
So this was a kind of like the first time we have to reschedule at the last minute, and I'll be honest, it was because of cricket.
Okay. Yeah, it was also the first time we did an outtake just now.
Yes, we did.
So maybe you want to post it.
Okay. So the topic for today's podcast is tools for Coco 2D development, and this will be an interesting podcast because, you know, tools help us to maximize accelerate our game development or any kind of development that we are using. And we have a number of tools. Of course, we have left out, you know, there are some tools that we have to left out because the list is very long. But these tools are the most commonly used tools when doing Coco's 2D game development. So, Stefan, why don't you start with the tiled map editor?
Yes, I can do that. I describe the tiled... Yeah, okay, it's tiled map editor, to be correct. And I described it in my book for making both orthogonal tile maps, which are similar to the old Ultima-type games, rectangular tiles, and as isometric, or is it isometric? I'm not sure. Isometric tile maps, let's use this word. And this is very interesting if you have a proper tile set for isometric images, and you can make a really 3D-ish looking tile maps with 2D images. And the tiled editor is, of course, it's free and it's open source, and you can download it at mapeditor.org. Okay. And it's a very well done tilemap editing tool, which uses, it looks like a native application for Mac users, but it's actually cross-platform and works on Windows too, if you happen to be developing on Windows or even Linux. And what I enjoy is it's really simple. It's bare bones tilemap editing. You have the ability to create several layers for objects. You also have a slightly oddly named object layer where you can place rectangles, and that's maybe a bit off-putting at first because the rectangles also act as point placements. So if you have a small rectangle, you can just use the center point of the rectangle, and that's, for example, you could use this as a location for where the player starts instead of using it as a trigger area. So overall, I'm very impressed by this tool. It's actually developed by one of the one developer who's working for Nokia in the Qt department, the Qt framework, which is a GUI tool framework, so he knows what he's doing, obviously. And it's been progressing very well in the recent years and has grown in popularity. One of the few things you have to be aware of with this tool is normal sprite sheets that you could create with TwopTex or Texture Packer don't actually work with tiled because it requires the tile images to be exactly placed next to each other. In my book, and maybe we can have this in the links too, there are tile sets which you can download to just experiment, and they are free to use, and actually you can use them even in commercial games as long as you give the proper attributions.
Cool. Yes, we'll do that.
Yep.
And you recently also blogged about something called iTile Maps.
Of course, yeah. Almost forgot about this. It's too new. This is a cool new development that's coming, came out for the iPad. It's called iTile Maps, and it's essentially the tiled map editor ported to the iPad. It's not actually a port, but in the same spirit, you have a very similar editing options because it also uses the same TMX file format, and it allows you to edit your tile maps on the road, for example. I probably wouldn't be using it for all my production work because it's I don't think that the iPad is very user friendly if you work on it for long hours. But if you happen to be on the road or if you're a commuter, then you'll probably enjoy being able to do levels. And once it's done, you can send it via email to your email account and get it into your game this way. Or I haven't tried this yet. It promises that you can actually send the tile map directly to your application. I'm not sure how this is working, but I'm assuming it's done with the external link thing. I don't remember the technical term for that. It's like when you click a link, a hyperlink in a mail, it'll open a specific app, and you can actually tell your app that it can work with certain types of hyperlinks.
Cool. The next one in our list is the Level Helper, and I think before Level Helper, I think there was only one tool to draw those kind of maps that I know of. It's called Level SVG, and it was available on the Cocos3D website store, but now I'm just going to the main website, Sapas Media. And Level SVG is also a pretty good tool. I mean, I think it's designed by Ricardo, the same guy who did the Cocos3D framework. But I mean, apart from it's awesome, I mean, but the only problem for me was it was a little bit pricey for me to buy. So I came across Level SVG, and it's like $5.99 or something. And
you're just confusing Level Helper.
Yeah, so.
Let me just, while I'm interrupting you, while I'm at it, Level SVG itself is just the reader for Inkscape SVG files. So you still need to use the Inkscape level editor. It's not actually a level editor. It's a polygon editing tool for general purposes. And Level SVG allows you to use their file format and build levels with it.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. So cool. So I started using Level Helper, and it's designed by Vlado Bogdan. And one of the good things about this is that the customer support that is provided by the author or the developer is like completely awesome. Whenever you email him, he will email you back instantly. And if you find any bugs, it will be corrected pretty much instantly. So Level Helper allows you to draw levels for your games. And mostly right now, they are the Box2D games. But I think the developer is working towards making it the Chipmunk compatible also. So it's a Mac application that you download from the Mac store. And basically, you just import your images and you just drag and drop the images using the help of another software that he has built, which is called a Sprite Helper. And this is also a very good software. It's, I think, available for $1.99 or something on the Mac store. Sprite Helper just takes all your images and kind of generates kind of like a sprite sheet. And then it imports itself to the Level Helper, where you can just use individual images to make your levels. So it makes it very, very easy to basically draw your levels just by dragging and dropping and giving them physical properties. Like, this is a circle, this is a rectangle, this is a different kind of polygon shape and all that. And they can all behave according to their properties. They also have, in the Level Helper, they also have joints. So you can make a join between two different bodies. And I think they have a rotation joint and a normal joint, you know, things like that. But it is continuously improving, and I'm very excited to see the future development. And another good news is that I recorded a podcast with Vlado Bogdan, which will be uploaded in a couple of days, in which he goes into more detail about the Level Helper and the Sprite Helper applications.
It's also one of the few tools, Sprite Helper and Level Helper, which are available only via the Mac App Store, if I'm correctly informed.
Yes, so the Level Helper and Sprite Helper are available only on the Mac App Store, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the next tool is the texture packer.
Yeah, I can talk more about this. Actually, the tool that came before that was called SwapText, and at the time it was the only tool which allowed you to pack several images into one large texture atlas. And texture packer is essentially the same thing, which adds a couple more features. I think it's pretty strong in the area where it comes to optimizing images or image quality, reducing the image size by and still having a still acceptable image quality. That's one of the strong features of Texture Packer. And what I really, really like about Texture Packer is actually the command line version. And while a user interface is great for getting into a tool and experimenting and trying things out, actually the command line tool, I realized that when back when I used SwapText that I had to do certain steps over and over again and recreate texture atlases. And with a command line tool, you are able to actually automate this process if you are capable to write some bash scripts or something like that. Although I'm not sure, I don't want to play down SwapText too much because I know they or the developer Robert Payne, I think it was, he's working on a big update coming soon. I think I heard something about a command line tool version being planned or at least being considered. So it's going to be interesting how those tools, both tools, are going to play out, but my current favorite is actually Texture Packer right at the moment. But of course, it costs a bit more,
Oh, okay.
not too much. And we should also mention that Sprite Helper is essentially also a texture packing tool, which plays in the same category, I think. But if you are not too picky on the money, I really recommend to try them all out, and I think they all have certain kinds of trial versions or shareware editions, something like that.
And then there's another tool which is kind of like the Sprite Helper and I guess the texture packer, which is ZerbText. Can you explain like what how is ZerbText different from texture packer?
Well, I think the biggest difference in Texture Packer, let me just have those both tools open at the same time. If you look at them just from their interface, you'll notice that they are quite similar, but Texture Packer actually has more options for you to choose, and I think it also supports more additional game engines, which SwapText doesn't currently support. For example, I mean, you can export to Corona. That's also something that SwapText can export to, but Texture Packer has GDX, which is a new and up and coming Android game engine worth checking out because I believe it's going to be the Cocos 2D for Android, so to speak. And one of the strong features is, and I think that's something that Andreas Löw, the developer of Texture Packer, introduced the first time, is the compressed PVR mode where you have excellently compressed images and still retaining most of the image quality. So that's definitely a bonus or strong point of that Texture Packer.
Cool. The next tool in our list is the physics editor, and this is also from Andreas. And physics, I played a little bit with the physics editor, and I'm really amazed like what it can do. Basically, the idea is that if you have a shape that you cannot, which is not a circle and which is not really a rectangle or a square, then how do you define that physical shape in your game? Because if you have a, let's say, I don't know, like a glass, and a glass is not really a circle and a glass is not really a rectangle or a square, so when it falls on the screen, it will always you know, it will always behave like a rectangle, which is kind of wrong. So physics editor, what it does, it creates those vertexes for you when you import your image. But if you don't like that, you can also do a tracing. You can also use a tracing tool provided by the physics editor, and you can trace out the vertexes yourself. But I have seen that whenever I import any image, it pretty much, I mean, all the time, it knows what the image is, and it
yep.
always draw the correct vertices, which is pretty awesome. Yeah,
yeah, that's one of the things that I noticed at first as well, because I just load an oddly shaped image, and of course it has to have a transparent area around it, so it works. But if you have that kind of image, and you automatically get a very good estimation or approximation of the collision shape. You don't actually have to do much, because all you do is load in the image and check if it's okay. And well, in most cases it's okay. So that's great and working very well.
Yeah. And I talked to Andreas, and I think he's working on something really cool. I mean, maybe like a wrapper around the box 2D. And then if the physics editor can work with the space manager, then it will be really awesome also. I talked to you know, Andreas, and currently the space manager handles the polygons in a different way than the physics editor does. So hopefully in the future, if physics editor, I mean, not the physics editor, but the space manager can be updated to kind of like whatever the physics editor is using, then they can be used you know, together, and it will be really cool to see that.
Yeah. Is this only a space manager issue, or is it an issue with Chipmunk? Because I see that there's at least an export option for Sparrow and Chipmunk, but it's not supported for Cocos2D. So you can't have Cocos2D plus Chipmunk in Physics Editor, only Sparrow plus Chipmunk, or Cocos2D plus Box2D, which is a bit odd, and maybe the reason why not too many Cocos2D users have been using a physics editor so far, at least according to Andreas' latest newsletter. He's got my vote for Cocos2D plus Chipmunk, definitely. That's a must-have over the next couple of months, I think.
Yeah, it might be the Chipmunk that is giving some problem, because Space Manager essentially is just a wrapper on the Chipmunk framework. So it might be. Then we have another tool which is kind of similar to the physics editor, which is Vertex Helper.
Yeah, I described this in my book because at the time it was the only barely usable kind of tool to actually edit those collision shapes. And it's still available. I think it has since moved to the App Store, where it costs some money. But there's also a GitHub version, which is free. It's essentially you have to draw the lines, the collision shapes yourself. There's no automatic collision shape detection or something like that. And one of the biggest negative features of Vertex Helper is actually that you have to, it creates the code for you, and you have to copy and paste the code into your own code or into your source files. And whenever you have to make an update to the code, you have to do the same process manually over again. So that's not very convenient. It worked, but I think Physics Editor is just far more convenient, so it's well worth the money. Even if Vertex Helper may be free, it's certainly a good investment to get a Physics Editor.
Yeah,
and I think the Physics Editor can also handle very well the convex shapes. I mean, what you tried to explain with the oddly shaped. There's concave and convex. I always mix them up, but the one is. Oh, let's not explain it.
Yeah.
People can probably look it up in Wikipedia and understand it way better than I could explain it. So concave and convex are the keywords here.
Yeah. Next to it is Glip Designer, and I think it's by the 71 squared or 7 squared website, and we'll have a link in the show notes, so you don't have to, you know, go over there and listen to everything I'm saying about the URL and everything. But Glip Designer basically allows you to create awesome looking fonts, and I was really impressed with this tool. It costs I think like 15, 17 or something amount of dollars, maybe $30 or something, but it's well worth the money. And what it allows you to do is create fonts for your games. I mean, if you're making a game, you need some awesome looking fonts for the menu screen, for the game over screen, or from the game playing point of view. If you are incrementing the score, if you are putting some messages out like, hey, congratulations, you are going into the next level or something. So Glib Designer allows you to do that. And you can completely change the look and feel of the font. It has a very vast library of fonts that you can select. And you can simply, you can change the gradients of the font. And then it will export the font into a PNG and a FNT font file, which you can later use in your Cocos 2D code using the font bitmap atlas labels or menus, which is CC menu and CC menu font classes, and you can use that in your application. Stefan, you want to explain it, the Glib Designer. Before Glib Designer, there was another software, which was Hero.
Yeah, before Glib Designer, there was Hero. It's spelled H-I-E-R-O, yes. And it's a Java tool, which means it's, for one, not really well integrated into the macOS operating system. And I also used this, or I think at least mentioned it in my book, and I later wrote a tutorial for using Hero on my website. But it's really full of bugs, this program, and so I'm really, really happy that the 71 Squared developers decided to essentially remake Hero, because when I look at Glib Designer, I see Hero in a beautiful interface and all options are there. I'm not missing one bit. You can even load your own fonts as you could before, but it doesn't have all the bugs like the images are saved upside down, or if you try to overwrite a file, it'll simply create a new file without the extension or something like that. So I'm really happy that there's Glib Designer now, because Hero was, again, another tool that wasn't really supported. It was, I think, used more for Windows development, if I'm informed correctly, and hasn't been updated in months or even years. So I'm glad that Glib Designer is here. And I also wanted to say, some developers might be wondering why they can't just use CC label TTF in Cocos 2D, just render TTF fonts in the iPhone. I have to say that there's a warning in the documentation that CC label TTF is slow. But it doesn't tell you why it's slow or how it is slow. And the reason being is, if you have a CC label TTF, by default, it's actually just the same thing as rendering a sprite. What is slow with a CC label TTF is changing the sprite, changing the text. So if you have a main menu and you just created, and you have a text like a new game, in your menu options, you can just use a CC label TTF, no problem. But if you have in-game score display, for example, which continues to count upwards, like 10, 100 points, 1,000 points, etc., the text will change very often, and it doesn't matter if the text is one character long or 10 characters or 100. Every time you change the text on a CC label TTF font, it throws away the old texture, creates a new one, renders the font, etc., etc. So there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff going on, and font rendering is particularly slow on the iPhone. So I made a demonstration program either on my website or at least mentioned in the book, which explains how much of an effect this has. And it shows that if you change the string of a CC label TTF once per second, you get like a tenth of a second small delay in your frame rate. So you have like this a stuttering frame rate. And that's because of the changing CC label TTF. That's why you want to use a tool like Glib Designer to create a bitmap font, which can be rendered entirely as sprites. and doesn't have the drawbacks of TTF rendering.
Yeah, one of the things, and I don't know if it's already in the Glib Designer, and I haven't looked at it, but one of the things that I really like to see in the Glib Designer is that allowing to share the fonts between different, you know, developers community kind of. I know that they also have a software or the application called Particle Designer, which allows you to create some awesome looking particle effects. And in the Particle Designer, I think you can connect, or I think you can submit the particle effect that you just created, and other people can download and use that effect. And I hope like this kind of functionality will be available for Glib Designer, because, you know, as a developer, it's kind of hard for a developer to be a designer, but we can actually look at different images, or we can look at different styles, and we can select, but we might not be able to create that kind of style as a developer. So it will be a good idea to include that in the Glib Designer. So you want to explain Particle Designer, and I mean how it actually works?
Yeah. Just one thing about the sharing of fonts. I mean, Particle Designer, you can share the fonts, upload them, and everyone else can browse the list of particle effects. I too am wondering why we don't have this with the fonts. And one reason might be just because of the overhead, because a font is much bigger than a particle definition file. That's just a couple bytes. Okay. Of data. And another thing is that I wanted to shortly mention is if you have a font like Arial or a Times New Roman, those are typically fonts that you can't just use in your own applications. The problem being that there's sort of a license fee to be paid to some authority. I don't remember. It's a bit like what is comparable? I just had it. Okay, just you have to know that for some fonts, you have to have the right to use them in your own application.
Yes.
The iPhone already provides, I think, Arial or Times New Roman. So you're okay creating a bitmap font out of those fonts and use them only on the iPhone. But some other fonts require you to actually purchase a license to be able to use them. And one thing, if you have that license and you would share your created bitmap fonts with the community, you probably would be violating a license agreement. And I think that's part of the reason as well why it doesn't allow sharing like Particle Designer does. And the Particle Designer, coming to Particle Designer now, that's a wonderful tool. It's actually pretty simple, because when you have a particle effect, it simply exposes all the configuration parameters of a particle effect that you can tweak. And you have everything from start size, lifespan, number of particles, radial acceleration, all sorts of variances of certain parameters, which means you have like a radial acceleration of 100. And if you set the variance to 50, it essentially means that you have a radial acceleration randomly chosen between 100 minus 50 and 100 plus 50 in that range. You can set the color, you can choose the texture. And one of the new additions, just recently, Particle Designer 1.3 was released, which uses quad-based particles. So you're actually allowed to use bigger textures now than the previous limitation of, I think it was 64 pixels squared. Now it's 512 pixels squared. Of course, if you try this on the older devices, it might not work, or it may be extremely slow. And generally speaking, particles are performance intensive, so you have to be careful to keep your number of particles down. But as far as Particle Designer is concerned, the biggest feature of it is that you see your particle effect in real time as you change the sliders. You see how the effect is, what kind of effect this has on your particle effect. Actually makes creating particles possible even for anyone other than trying to modify the parameters in code compiling your app, running your app, seeing how what it does, and you have to do the same process over to see a change. And by that time, it's probably 30 seconds or longer. You don't remember what the previous particle system looked like, so you can't really compare. So a real-time editing tool like Particle Designer is really, really, really helpful to create cool particle effects. And if you want to see some of my own particles in the shared emitter settings, try looking for the PFX subtitle Stream of Urine. I built this once for a game I was working on. Have a look. Okay. I think the name says it all.
Cool. Yeah, one thing you mentioned is that the Particle Designer, what it does is when you're changing some properties, it will allow you to see what kind of effects you're creating. And this is very helpful for developers because, you know, we want to see kind of like the instant results. And those applications which allows us to, or which, you know, which will say, okay, now you've created the effect. You cannot see it until you copy paste the code over there and then build it and then compile it and run it. So I think for people who are interested in designing these kind of applications for, you know, development, this should, one thing to keep in mind is that if you're building something like a particle effect or a level, then it would be much suitable that we can just run the level at that time, execute it right at that time from the application that they have instead of porting it. And that's also one of the things I like about Level Helper. One of the features that they that the developer introduced is that run the level right now after designing the level right from the application. So that is, I think, a very awesome feature. You can just, you know, drag and drop different things, and then you can set up the physical properties, and then you can run the level right from inside the level helper, and it will show you how your level will look like and how it will behave when you are actually running it, you know, for your application, for your iPhone application or iPad. Yeah.
Does Level Helper actually allow you to design screens for Cocos2D, for example, to visually create your menu screens, for example, or entire levels? Is it really a game editing tool?
I've talked to the developer or the author of the Level Helper, and he was telling me that you can design menu screens for that. I'm not really sure what it really mean to design a menu screen, but I'm pretty sure, I mean, what I have experienced or what I have learned is that you can design levels, you know, like, I don't know, like if you are a developer of a game of Angry Birds, okay, so you can literally take the square or the rectangle or whatever and then put it and then make a house, and then you can, you know, drag and drop the trees and everything, and you can make the whole level out of that. You can run it, you can test the level. Of course, it won't really do anything because it will just show you how it looks like. And then when you port it into, and when you get the code in the Cocos2D, then you can implement your logic that how the bird will fly and how this will happen and how that will happen. So,
Yeah, we need more tools of those. I think it's a bit of a joke now, but back in 2009, when we were first evaluating which kind of engine we would like to use for iPhone development, we found Cocos2D and looked at how fast it was progressing, and everyone said, okay, within 6 months there will be a level editor. And I think it's taken now 2 years longer than what we expected. But it's great that those tools are actually coming. They're more complex, obviously, than or possibly more complex than a texture packing tool or a glyph designer or something like that. But we really, really need those level editing tools because tiled, on one hand, is only for tile-based games, so free placement of sprites and things like that, or just generally a free placement, the menu designing. By that I mean where the buttons are and setting button properties and something like that. That's still missing, and I know that one existing tool is currently ported to support Cocos2D. I'm looking forward to this. Maybe it'll be out around summer or something like that. And I think I heard some other developers mention that they are working on a game editing tool, but I'm taking this with a grain of salt because I haven't seen any proof of concept or any announcements yet. So I'm just waiting for those really, really cool level editing tools and more of them, definitely.
Yeah, I also heard, and this is from the Twitter, I heard that someone is working on a menu creation tool, and they already have the prototype out and people are using it.
And what's it called?
I have no idea. That's what that is. That is okay. Kind of
Google. I have no idea.
I have no idea. Yeah. So yeah, we can actually. This is a question for our listeners. That if you know the name of the tool, you can just write it in the comments, and we'll include that in the show notes. It was designed to create the menus, especially for the menus, like the play button, the play and the contact us and rate our application, kind of like that. Especially designed to create menus for the CocoaStudy games. But after Twitter, it just, it was just gone. And I'm not sure how that particular application has progressed.
I just Googled it, but or tried to find it via Google, but nothing came up. So let's hope someone else has picked up this and this tweet and can let us know what the tool was named, because we really need more of those tools. And menu designing is definitely also one that's very helpful. That would be very helpful.
Yeah. So the next, I think the final agenda for in our list is, you said some of the, experience, I guess, for putting the dev tools on Mac stores. And one of the things you mentioned is that dev tools do not benefit much from the greater exposure.
Yeah, that was a question that came up on my blog. Why not publish the tools or more of those tools on the App Store? I think... one of the reasons that developers or developers of tools for game developers aren't particularly interested in publishing their own tools on the App Store is because Apple takes 30%, and compared to the 5% or at most 10% that e-commerce providers take, it's a big drop in revenue, and you are actually selling to a small niche of developers, and developers are quite well informed. So chances are that they won't find your tool first on the Mac App Store, but they'd more likely find it by forum posts and a link to your website. There's not really that big incentive. You are not selling to mom and dad your glyph designer or your texture packer. So that's one reason why there's not too many developer tools on the App Store. Another thing is the updates, of course, they take longer. They might be rejected even. You can't do an automatic update check in your tool, which is pretty cool. Most of the tools here, when I start them, they tell me, hey, there's a new version available, just like an hour ago, a particle designer informed me about the version 1.3. It tells me the change log, and I can just update it as is. I don't have to go to the App Store and make an update of all my apps. Of course, many of the tool developers already have existing customers, and they would have to buy the App Store version if they want to switch over to the App Store version, or if the developer decides to make a version 2 after having the version 1 out and the version 2 is only on the App Store. He could not give those existing customers a rebate for being a customer if it were in the App Store. And finally, I think that's one of the biggest reasons is marketing. If you have your own website and you sell via your own website, everything, every link concentrates on your own website. Now, if you put your tool on the Mac App Store, people start finding it on the App Store, but will actually completely ignore your website. And so it's taking away from your Google rankings a bit. Your website takes actually a negative hit, so to speak. And I think it's more effective to keep building up your own website and selling your own tools on your website and keep customers and Google focused on that website and It helps, and it also allows you to do more of the analytics. So you know how many developers are buying your tools, when, from where they came, etc. There's a lot of information that you can gather that would be helpful to target your product more effectively if you sell it on your website compared to the Apple App Store. So those are just a couple of reasons why I don't think that we'll see more developer tools going to the App Store. I think that a couple will go or stay on the App Store, but the majority will remain to be web-based products or sold on the web. Okay, I hope this wasn't too much now.
No, that was cool. Yeah, so I think that's pretty much it. And in this podcast, we discussed like different tools that you can use for game development, especially with the framework that we are using, which is Cocos 2D framework. And you know, of course, we have left out some of the tools because we cannot really go on the complete list. But these are the main tools that if you are developing any kind of game, like, you know, each tool is kind of like focused on a different kind of game. So if you can just use them, some of them are available for free. Some of them you have to pay. But, you know, the price is very, very
moderate,
and you can easily afford it. I think if
you got all those tools together, you'd still not be paying more than $100. So if you get all the tools, and I think the total sum will be below $100.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Maybe someone can do the calculation and let me know if that's correct.
Yeah. And I think in the end, I just want to, you know, thank all the listeners. We have been receiving some awesome feedback. They've been emailing. They've been tweeting about the Cocos 2D podcast. And if you like to see any other, you know, topics, we have, I mean, a lot of topics actually for the future podcast. And some of the guests will be coming on the show. But if the listeners have a peculiar topic in mind, they can always, you know, contact Stefan, or you can contact me, or tweet about it, and we'll just put that, you know, on the more higher priority, I guess. And also one of the message I have is the Learning Cocos 2D podcast that I've been running. It's the last episode was part number 7, in which we discussed labels. It's been going on, and
that's your YouTube
channel. Yeah,
and yeah, we'll have you said podcast.
Oh. I said, okay, yeah, not podcast, but the screencasting or the videos, and they are hosted on YouTube, of course, available for free, and you can, you know, subscribe to that channel. I will have a link to the channel in the show notes, and watch it, and, you know, I have a very long list that I need to cover, which will take a couple of months. Some of the people are actually saying that, why don't you develop a game from the start to finish, and that's also in the works. We'll just develop a very simple game to get you started, and then we'll proceed to different levels. Stefan, do you have anything you like to say before we end the podcast?
It's not entirely related to Cocos 2D per se. I just recently started a new project with a friend together, and I'll just let you know about the website, and you'll figure out yourself what it's about, and maybe follow it a bit, see where it goes. We are not quite sure yet either. The website is www.wewantyourmoneythegame.com. No dashes, no, just We Want Your Money, the game. And it's about the We Want Your Money, the game, of course. So check it out. Let me know what you think.
Okay, cool. So, with these messages, I think we'll conclude the podcast, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Yeah, see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.